time for our first Sunday political debate. And here they are in-house, ladies and gentlemen. Let's have a round of applause. Do you have an applause? Do we have an applause audience there somewhere? I know we have one. The folks in the next room are listening. Ladies and gentlemen, Republican Jim Pomeroy.
Thanks for having me again.
Libertarian Nicholas Sawa.
Morning, Jerry.
Green Party Eric Mickelson.
Hey, Jerry.
Did you notice that from the Green Party? Hey, Jerry. Sound like that's the reason why Ralph Nader left them. Anyway.
Oh, come on, Jerry. Good morning.
And the one and only Democrat, ladies and gentlemen, Patrice McKinney.
Good morning, Jerry.
Thank you very much. You know, we need to stage more things in American politics. I thought the staging of the GOP convention last week was just tremendous. They put my president out there on a dime that looked like a baseball mound, and he talked and he spoke to America.
It was a great speech, and it was a great convention.
I didn't go that far, Jim. I didn't go that far. Welcome, everybody. This is our first Sunday political roundtable. Let's start with Michael Steele, since he was supposed to have been on our airways this morning, Lieutenant Governor of Maryland. He got an awful lot of headlines. And in all of the headlines, the president appointed him head of the African-American contingency. And then Governor Ehrlich of Maryland stepped in with a press conference at a Maryland press conference. And the good governor, were you there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was
at the Maryland.
I went to a number of the Maryland events. Right. He had a great party a couple of nights ago, and I obviously went to the convention and for his speech and for his activities during the convention.
But there was a smell of tokenism whenever the name Michael Steele came up.
I don't think so.
What do you think about folks?
Well, you know, I think when people talk about tokenism with regards to Michael Steele, oftentimes they're trying to refer to racial issues. I actually think it probably refers more to his politics. He's actually a very moderate Republican, unlike the folks who are drafting the Republican platform and that sort of thing. And most of the mainstream face of the Republican Party, Michael Steele, from what I've seen of his activities in Maryland, does not necessarily reflect a lot of those more conservative values.
Right. They really were trotting out the moderates at this convention between Steele, Schwarzenegger, Giuliani, McCain. Basically, the Republican Party did a very good job of showing all of the center-of-the-road Republicans in the days leading up to Bush's speech. And as Eric pointed out, the actual positions that they've been taking in the platform, I know groups like the Log Cabin Republicans are very upset that really the process of deciding on issues and positions is still being controlled by a more extreme and anti-freedom element of the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's a clear example of the all show and very little substance that the Republican Party has put forward. The rhetoric was excellent. However, it had absolutely nothing to do with the record or the facts or what's actually happened in the past 4 years.
Well, it's interesting that we mentioned the platform, because the Democrats solved the problem of where you stand in your platform by, in some instances, simply not mentioning issues, and in other issues, mentioning both sides of it. So I think it did reflect Senator Kerry. I mean, you actually had a national Democratic platform that took multiple positions on the same issue to try to make everyone believe they agreed with them. The Republican platform was honest, straightforward. It was very similar to the platform that Ronald Reagan was elected on, that President Bush was elected on the first time, and his father was elected on. So, we're consistent. These are our views, and this is where we stand.
I have to disagree just a little bit. The platform Ronald Reagan ran on, while it was fiscally conservative, like the current platform, at least in name, is fiscally conservative, Reagan was a lot more accepting of social freedoms than the current Republican platform is. The gay marriage issue, the abortion issue, the issues of stem cell research, there are a lot of issues that the current Republican platform has gone over the line, in my opinion.
Let me point something out, though. Under President Reagan, there was no stem cell research because it didn't exist yet. It was 25 years ago. So, no, that the stem cell was not in there.
No, he's talking about issues.
Right, but in terms of the platform, the platform today, with few exceptions, is the same as the platform Ronald Reagan ran on. It is the same as the platform the first President Bush ran on, the current President Bush ran on. We have been consistent in our issues, and Ronald Reagan was consistent on his issues also.
And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with Jim to say that, well, look, they're putting it out there for everyone to see and that it's consistent and, you know, conservative and all those kinds of things. But the issue is, as Nick had said and I said sort of earlier, that the people that they were trotting out, Giuliani, Schwarzenegger, Michael Steele and whatnot, these folks tend not to hold those extreme views that are in the platform. So, in fact, they gave the, you know, if you go deep into the sort of bowels of the Republican Party and dig out the platform, you get to see these, you know, Cro-Magnon
views.
Well,
it was said up front. It was said up front that there would be a divide between the platform.
Well, I'm not sure.
Let me finish.
Okay.
And the cabin GOP members who are ultra conservative, and those that would lead up, like you say, the Schwarzeneggers and all of them. But the problem is, the point here is, you even had within that ultra conservative arena some division, like Pat Buchanan, who has just written a book disagreeing when as he said on the Today Show, I disagree with the way the president is presenting our point of view.
Well, let me say that not everyone has to agree, and I would say that all Republicans from right to left pretty much agree on 75% of the issues. And the issues in the platform. I would say that 75% of the platform is agreeable to just about every single Republican.
But was it presented? That's the question.
Well, I think what we presented was a lot of national figures from middle to right to left who all have one thing in common. They support President Bush's reelection.
But you've got a Republican Party that's more divided than ever before. And again, you've got rhetoric.
Of course not. It's more united than ever. I don't want to hear that.
No, it's more united than ever before.
Excuse me, Jim.
You've got rhetoric that belies the facts. You've got the rhetoric of small government, but we've got the largest government that we've had in many, many years. You've got a rhetoric of fiscal conservatism, yet we've got a $5 trillion budget deficit, the largest that we've ever had in this country. Clearly, the Republican Party is saying one thing and doing another.
Our telephone number 301-230. Jim, you can get off the floor now. 301-telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon wireless system. And our lines are open. Get in on the first Sunday debate, as we always like for you to do, as we talk with Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Emily Leffler, Independent, is not here this morning, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Eric Mickelson, our Green Party representative. Nicholas.
I'm just kind of glad that the conventions are over, given that basically these parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, have spent approximately $40 million between the actual convention costs and the security costs associated with them of our taxpayer money on these giant, you know, shindigs for lobbyists and candidates who all seem to be able to raise tons of money when it comes to getting elected.
Well, it's not like the old day conventions where you saw gavel to gavel. Number one, the networks don't even want to carry it anymore.
Right.
This is such a show. I mean, there's very little substance coming out of these conventions.
And I don't mind that. I think it's great that they have big parties. I just wish that maybe they wouldn't take taxpayer dollars to pay for them. I mean,
right.
I wasn't invited to the party, so I prefer they didn't take my money to throw
it. One of the concerns that a lot of people had, and this came out in a lot of reports, the two candidates, both President Bush and John Kerry, Senator John Kerry, both of them hit the campaign trails today talking about the economy. A lot of people are saying that, and they're differing views about the economy, naturally. But there are a lot of people who are observing the convention. A lot of people felt that the economy was not talked about enough, especially in the economic conditions in which we live. Jim, I'll come to you last so you can do the follow-up. I'll start with the Democrat, Patrice.
Yeah, absolutely. In none of the speeches of the Republican convention did you hear the word deficit, the largest deficit that we've had in the history of this country, and the issue was not even brought up in the Republican convention. We didn't hear the word deficit, and we didn't hear the word Osama. The two big issues of the day were not addressed. What we had was a lot of rhetoric about Republican Party and what they're doing and leadership, you know, and this is simply something that is rhetoric delivered by actors, draft dodgers, war profiteers. I mean, this convention was really lies and distortion. They took records out of context and twisted them. The economy was not addressed. There were no specific plan for how we would bring this economy forward. And I think that the Republicans still have a lot to answer for.
Eric?
Well, again, I certainly agree with what Patrice has said, and I think, you know, it benefits the Republicans not to address the issues that they don't look so good on, like the economy, the environment, those sorts of things. And obviously, when you've overseen the loss of millions of jobs in your administration, during your administration, record deficits and whatnot, you know, increasing people losing health care benefits, those aren't the kinds of things that you want to mention.
Nicholas,
the thing that frustrated me a lot was listening to Bush's speech. He's obviously afraid of the Libertarian candidate Michael Badnar because he keeps bringing up quasi-libertarian rhetoric. And within 3 minutes in that speech, he was talking about this litany of expanded federal programs, more areas in which he felt that the government knew how to run your life better than you did. And as Patrice mentioned, he wasn't mentioning how he was going to pay for it.
Well, Jim Pomeley.
It's amusing listening to these comments and then seeing how the rest of America viewed it. Unlike Senator Kerry, who got no bounce out of his convention, according to a number of polls from Newsweek, Time, and others, President Bush had an 11-point bounce out of this convention, which means the American people looked at this convention and liked it. Now bounces go up and down.
I don't know how many watched it. If you didn't have cable, you couldn't see
the
it.
The polls, and I think the networks definitely
only
should have spent more time.
Only 40% of American people watched it.
The networks, the ratings were low, they
right. called
them.
No, I mean, they were low for both parties, and that's
right.
a shame. But the polls show that President, and this is Time and Newsweek, this isn't anything
but
that I put together, 11-point bounce.
Yeah, but the same polls next week, it's so, I mean, after an election, after a convention, you do get a bounce. And
Kerry got zero.
We're looking at an incumbent president, and if
Kerry
he can't
got
get
zero.
A bounce.
And in fact, the incumbent presidents over history have gotten half the bounce of the challenger.
Well,
so
let's bounce off to the people now.
We got double. So I got 11
off,
times.
Let's bounce off to the real people calling in. On telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. Here we talk about politics on our first Sunday debate. Eric Mickelson along with Patrice McKinney and Jim Pomeley and Nicholas Sawalk. Jim in Arlington, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
I have a comment to the young lady a couple minutes ago that made a comment that said the Republican Party was divisive, was very divided. Did you happen to watch the RNC?
Yes, sir, I did.
What do you think of Zell Miller's comments? He was a keynote speaker. Now. He's a well-known Democrat.
He sure is. And Zell Miller's speech was factually discredited immediately after the after it was given. And even Laura Bush disinvited Zell Miller to the president's box to hear the president's acceptance speech. Zell Miller was discredited. It was really sad that that was the only person that the Republicans could find to trot out.
Yeah, well, it's a shame. Well, it's a shame that we found a senior Democratic member of the Senate.
Jim,
darn.
He came out
and vote. He said he was going to vote for Bush first of all, which basically tells me he's a true American. He's going to vote his conscience, whether he's a Democrat or not.
Oh, voting for Bush makes you a true American?
Well, he admitted that he's voting. He's voting his conscience.
Excuse me, sir. I'm asking you.
I think he's a true American.
Because he's voting for Bush.
Well, amen.
Let me give you a couple other reasons, okay?
Well, not necessarily. I just wanted you to answer that question. Let me ask my buddy over here, Mr. Mickelson, to kick in.
Well, you know, let's not forget Zell Miller is a guy who made his name, stumping for Lester Maddox. This is a guy who basically feels the Democratic Party left him. And my hope is that the Democratic Party left him about 30 or 40 years ago when it split with the Dixiecrats. You look at this guy, as long as he's been in the Senate, frankly, I've always thought he was an embarrassment. And it's not really a surprise that he did this turncoat.
Jim, hold the line, will you?
Yeah, I still have a couple comments I'd like to make.
Okay, hold the line. I got Ed on his cell phone. I want to get Ed in here. Ed, Jim is on the line with you along with the panel here. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How you guys doing?
Fine. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a comment to make real quick. Several things. First of all, Zell Miller is a Democrat, but this is the same Democrat that I believe gave the keynote address and introducing Clinton, but then he wasn't a problem. And if the Democratic Party doesn't have a problem with Robert Byrd, who was a known grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, please don't start calling Zell Miller a Klansman. Number three, most Americans are very smart. They understand that no other issue matters if you wind up dead. So this is not the time to be worrying about this issue, be it the environment or new social programs or whatever. Most Americans understand, especially what happened in Russia, that there are people out there to kill us. So the question, the preeminent question is, who's going to do the best job and be unapologetic and be not sensitive in protecting it? And people understand that's George Bush. And most people who support him don't agree with him on everything, but they understand this. When they go to sleep at night, they want somebody on the job who's going to protect them, and that's George Bush right now.
Okay.
And the Swiftwell vets have attacked, I shouldn't say attacked, but they've exposed Kerry's character, and he's flip-flopped, and he's not being honest. He has no other issue to run on.
Thank you.
And American people understand that.
Thank you. Can I make a comment, Jerry?
Go right ahead, my friend.
Okay, Mr. Kerry, okay, let's go to the Democratic candidate for presidency. He spent 4 months in Vietnam riding around on a Swift boat, okay? That was his job. I'm not knocking that. But if you notice the TV ads, what's he doing? He's walking through the jungle on an F-16. Let me finish, okay?
No, but I want to clarify which TV ads.
The one with him walking through the jungle with a steel pipe on his hand, the F-16, and a bandolero across his chest. Okay, I was in the infantry in Vietnam.
Okay, go right ahead, sir.
Okay, I was in the infantry in Vietnam. He spent an abbreviated 4-month tour, and he got credit for 2 tours, okay? Okay, I spent 12 months over there humping the bush, getting shot at, waking up with leeches in my mouth every morning, okay? I never put myself in for a medal. I didn't even know you could put yourself in for a medal, but he did it.
Right, okay.
He's got 3 Purple Hearts, and he never spent an hour in sick day.
Okay,
but he
Jim.
Was wounded by the enemy 3 times. Come on now.
Jim, thank you very much for your comment, and
you
thank
done?
You.
Are you. I'm done now. I got to hang up, right?
Okay, good buddy. You take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you, Ed.
I just have one comment on Zell Miller. Zell Miller's got a book to sell. Zell Miller was signing books the next day. Zell Miller has no real principles other than being divisive and angry.
Wow.
And that's what he's good at, and that's why they brought him up, to be good at being divisive and angry. And he was divisive and angry when he stumped for Clinton, too. He was basically saying, you know, all this, the Dixiecrats, come along, you can vote for this guy. And now he's doing it again. He's like, all the Dixiecrats, come along and you can vote for this guy.
This is the first Sunday roundtable. I'll debate, political debate, every first Sunday with our bipartisan, not bipartisan, we call it the multipartisan now because everybody's here. But a multipartisan panel, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, Democrat Patrice McKinney, and Eric Mickelson, Green Party, and our independent Emily Leffler is out in being independent. I guess she's not with us this morning, but anyway, our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. Ed called in just a while ago and had something very important to say. And his point is this, that Americans sleep better at night because of the present administration, George Bush. And that's what people, that's what Americans are most concerned with. Do you agree with that? And let me ask you, Nicholas.
I don't sleep better at night because of the president, George Bush, because both Bush and Kerry both agree that going to war in Iraq is a good idea. They both agree that you know, the foreign policy that's interventionist around the world is a good idea, and that makes me sleep less safe at night. The more we anger groups around the world, the more we will be a target for attack. And the Russians are a great example of what happens when you have a foreign policy that gets involved in other countries' business.
Okay.
Right. I think Nick actually brings up a really interesting point here, talking about the Russian example. If you look at the way that the Russians have handled the Chechnya situation, I mean, they've been far less apologetic and far more heavy-handed than any even U.S. tactics towards the, you know, opposition, and in fact have suffered, you know, blowback of enormous proportions. And it seems to me, and, you know, I hope it would seem to other people, that this type of tactic is not the way to address the kind of situation. These are symptoms of a larger problem that it cannot be simply stomped out with force.
Very quickly, Patrice.
I agree with Nicholas. I feel less safe and do not sleep well at night knowing that George Bush is our commander-in-chief, because George Bush has alienated all of our allies. He just marched forward in a preemptive way against Iraq without considering the opinions or the strength that the allies could have brought with him to the effort.
Let's talk to Steve in Gaithersburg. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I'd like to talk about not so much George Bush's policies, but the people he's chosen to implement those policies. Specifically, it's not that I disagree with what George Bush did in Iraq, but I do disagree with some of the people he's got running the policies that are making it safer, specifically John Ashcroft, Tom Rumsfeld, not particularly filled with Condoleezza Rice. And while I think that John Kerry has some of the same ideas on what we should do about our national security policy, I'd actually like to hear who he wants to use to implement those policies.
I'm primarily a Republican, and I'm trying to think of a reason why I should vote for George Bush with the people he's got doing this, because they're using methods in terms of our personal liberties to implement those policies that I disagree with.
You know, I think you're right, sir, because I'm myself as an American citizen, I would like to know who your team is. I mean, you know, who's a part of that team when you're talking about being president of the United States? Who are you looking to as Secretary of State and on down the line? I think this guy has a good point here.
Well, I'll say that we certainly have a clearer view of President Bush's cabinet than we would of a prospective Kerry cabinet. What do you want, then?
Excuse
You've
me,
got
Jim.
The info.
Hey, excuse me, Jim. President Bush is an incumbent. They've been in business for 4 years.
So what's the problem?
Well, there's a lot of problems. You hear the gentleman on the line.
Yeah, but he's saying
he doesn't like it.
Oh, right. I understand his problem. Well, he wants to know who the people in the next administration are going to be. And what
it's a legitimate question.
Right, it's a legitimate question. What I'm saying is President Bush has answered it more fully than has Senator Kerry.
He's answered it. He's been talking for 4 years. I don't know anything about him. Go ahead, sir.
What do we know about John Kerry?
I don't think George Bush has answered that question. There's a great deal of speculation that a lot of people in his current administration won't be there in the second administration.
Right.
Felt is certainly a question. Colin Powell is certainly gone, even though he's been marginalized by Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who he's going to put in place. And given that there's a lot of people who are not happy with the choices he's made, I know a lot of people don't like John Ashcroft, a lot of people don't like Donna Rumsfeld. I think it's a legitimate question to ask him, in a new administration, I know you're loyal, but you know you're going to change these people. Who do you want? And I think that's a legitimate question for Kerry as well.
Well, okay. I think we're going to get lots
much,
of.
Steve.
I think we're going to get Condi Rice, and I'm a big fan of hers, so that would be great. But let me
out.
Say, let me ask, as Secretary of State,
sing?
I'm guessing. But
is she sing or something?
What?
You're a fan.
I'm a big fan. Well, you know, if she sang, I'd be a big fan of that, too. But she is a great policymaker. And let me say, who would Senator Kerry appoint to all these positions?
Well, I have to admit, I think it's a very legitimate question. It's an excellent question, and one I've wondered myself. It's something that's simply not done, though. When does a president or a prospective president or a presidential candidate ever put forth his cabinet before the election?
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 of Verizon Wireless System. You're in city, Washington, D.C. Naturally, politics is our factory. Here with Clear Channel Radio and Metro Talk, we try to bring all ends to the table so that we'll have a better understanding as to where we all come from. Regardless, we are unified America. This is Metro Talk.
I know. I've talked.
Did you like that?
I did like that.
That was ad-libbed.
That's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I've talked to a lot of Republicans who are frustrated with the current administration and won't vote for Kerry. They won't vote for a Democrat, and a lot of them see the Libertarian alternative as a good possible alternative because it, you know, the Libertarian candidate supports the fiscally conservative values that they hold dear while still not going far afield as John Ashcroft does in trampling civil liberties and ripping up our Constitution and not going abroad in interventionist wars, getting our boys killed for other people's problems.
301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call on Verizon. We'd like for you to get online. I have lines open as we talk about the issues of the day, something that we all want to talk about. Protesters in New York. That was just one city where people have been protesting, but anyway, the list of demands is long. There are protests against Iraq, protests about the educational agenda, protests on the tax cuts, protests on the tax system, the environment, and gays' rights. You can go on and on and on, it says in my script here. What about the protests? Did they have any impact? They certainly weren't shown on television very much, except just a few people getting locked up. Eric?
Well, you know, I think particularly the last weekend protests, I had a couple friends who were up there and said they were very peaceful, very well attended, hundreds of thousands of folks. You know, the kind of impact on the public at large that they had, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, it showed a great deal of dissatisfaction with the current policy.
Nicholas, did it give a statement, the protests? Was there a statement out of that?
Well, I know that our presidential candidate, Bednarik, was protesting there, and the interesting thing about that was they didn't get a protest permit. We firmly believe as libertarians
right.
that we have a permit to protest.
Right.
It's called the First Amendment.
And that made a news
story. The Constitution. It says that I have the right to free speech. America is a free speech.
But my question is, did the protests in New York
did they make an impact?
Yeah.
I think they did make an impact.
Okay.
I think the statement is that the country is definitely not happy right now.
Let me go to Jim Pomley. I'll come to Patrice.
I was there. The protests were overblown. They didn't get much coverage, in part because it seemed that half of the signs people were holding couldn't be printed in a family newspaper or set over this radio station. I think that, you know, basically they had a mixed message of the protest. They were disjointed, and they had no effect.
Anyway, Patrice.
200,000 people protesting in New York City is, I would say, very significant. Each person has possibly a different issue that they're concerned about, but in the aggregate, that shows that there is a great deal of dissatisfaction. The president has done nothing but put out there a campaign of fear. He's trying to instill fear in the American people and then hold up Saddam Hussein, Iraq, Osama bin Laden, kind of smoke and mirrors. He's deflecting from the issues that people are very much concerned about, the economy, education, the environment.
Terrorism.
Absolutely, terrorism.
Which is exactly what we talked about.
Which is not
exactly
synonymous. Which is not synonymous with Iraq.
Osama bin Laden.
And Osama bin Laden was not mentioned in the Republican convention at all. He simply isn't addressing the issues that people are concerned about. He's using fear as his platform.
We're talking
the girly man panel.
Oh my goodness. I mean, you're not a movie star. Moving right ahead. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. I mean, you know, these kind of names, the stereotyping coming out of these parties, I mean, offensiveness, come on, you know? Let's talk to Pat in Alexandria. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, darling. And I would like to say to Patrice that every candidate uses the politics of fear in order to defeat his incumbent. It's very simple. The other thing, too, quite frankly, that I'm concerned about is I haven't heard, and I really don't know who I'm voting for yet. I really don't. I haven't heard anybody say how we're going to continue to pay various projects and programs that have come up, some of which were started under Democrats, some, like No Child Left Behind, President Bush. We have too many unfunded mandates that our local governments are trying to handle, and the federal government is doing nothing to assist there. The other thing, too, as far as protests go, we have a protest for every election. It doesn't make that much of an impact. Sorry, folks, it doesn't. New Yorkers are going to look at it and go, I'm on my way to work. That's what we used to do. And as far as Senator Miller goes, Nicholas, I am devastated that I have to disagree with you. I am totally devastated. Senator Miller is a fine human being and a decent, honest man. If he was an attack dog at the Republican convention, he was asked to be that, the same way he was Clinton's attack dog. When you have your certain beliefs, you defend them, you do what you have to do. Now that he has changed his mind in certain areas, it's no reason to call him an idiot.
I didn't say he was an idiot. I said that basically he's always been very angry and divisive in his politics, and essentially the Republicans rolled him under the bus. Once he finished his attack dog speech, they're like, oh, no, he can't sit with us.
Let me ask you a question then, Nicholas. Senator Robert Taft was an isolationist. He was completely devoted to keeping the United States out of any foreign policies. On December 8th, 1941, he completely backed President Roosevelt. Did that make him a bad person?
No, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't make him a bad person. I'm saying Miller's rhetoric is angry and divisive.
Oh yeah, and like, you know, Kerry's isn't.
I'm just saying it
Bush
is.
Isn't Cheney? My God, the guards over the Western Wall. Yeah.
That's not Cheney.
And look
Cheney's
at Teresa's.
You know, I'm just waiting for Kerry to, you know, quote unquote, take his gloves off.
Right.
But my one fear is, if he breaks his knuckles, is he going to file for a Purple Heart?
Oh, boy.
Oh,
boy.
Does Kerry have any attack dogs?
Can I write that line down? Thank you very much, Pat.
Have a good one, darling.
Love you.
Does Kerry have attack dogs?
Yes, his wife.
Excuse me, you're stepping on the host, the moderator.
I think Kerry's playing fair. He's fighting his own battles. He's not bringing in a Dick Cheney or his own
Miller.
Excuse me,
you're stepping on the moderator's line. Let's go to Lou in Columbia. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning. Fascinated by your show.
Thank you very much.
I liken President Bush's view of manhood to a schoolyard bully. A great nation doesn't go to war against a third-rate power, not even a power. This country stands and has stood for principles and ideals that the world has looked forward to. The world now fears us because we act like the thugs that we're trying to fight against. This is not an example for the world to follow. This person here, I have been a lifelong Republican. I am now disgusted with this current administration. I very much fear for our freedoms. Not enough talk about that to my way of liking, but the freedoms that America are seriously at risk at this point, and our leadership is seriously flawed.
Lou, hold on the line, will you?
Go ahead.
Okay, let's get Luke in Germantown on the line to also talk. Luke, meet Lou and the panel.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys?
Fine. Go right ahead. You heard what Lou said. I'd like to get your input.
I quite agree with what Lou said. Actually, to be honest with you, I don't think I'm afraid as I am in the United States than as afraid as I'm leaving the country. You know, we could say we're safe here, we're protected here. But what happened when we leave the United States? We said we're free, but we cannot leave our country because of what might happen. They're kidnappers out there and stuff like that. I mean, I'm afraid what is going to happen, you know, in the next 5 years. I mean, Bush is saying, okay, well, I'm going to protect the country. You can only run for 4 more years. And after that, what happens? And I'm asking myself, what if there's no September 11th? What is Bush going to run on then? I mean, would that be any other issue that we'll have to be looking forward to other than, oh, terrorism and freedom? I'm asking myself, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we had no September 11th. And Bush would have been in so much trouble if 4 years ago there was no September 11th. If he had to run now and run on some other issue, I don't know what else he's going to have to say to us, to everybody.
Luke,
Jerry?
Yeah, go right ahead, Lou. Here's
why my fear has grown so much. Up until the last 2 years, any time a charge was brought against any citizen of this country, there was a well-established and well-practiced judicial system methodology to protect an individual. That is now gone. The president, at the stroke of a pen, can declare a person an enemy combatant or whatever terminology they use, and all judicial protections and safeguards are instantly removed. And that is a very serious situation.
Let me ask both of you. Luke, where are you from?
I'm actually from Nigeria.
Okay. All right. I just detected an accent. I wanted to know. Let me ask you the one international question that we did not, again, he had to come up in any of these conventions. And that is, well, it was mentioned. That is our image around the world. Lou, you kind of alluded to that when you talked about America.
Yes.
And its power against a smaller power. But what is, how do you guys, very quickly, how do you see our image around the world?
Well, the image is reflected by the image of the president, the schoolyard bully. America never had that image before. We were always the tolerant power. We were the well-thought-out and the well-reasoned power. Now we're the aggressive combatant.
Okay.
That is not a favorable view in the world.
Thank you very much, Lou. Now let's talk to Luke. Luke, very quickly, you have about 10 seconds.
Well, yeah, basically, 10 years ago, everybody was, you know, especially back from, you know, area where I come from, is, oh, United States is, you know, very good, and they listen, and they, you know, they kind of help the world out. Now, we've been looked at as, oh, you know what, you guys mustn't have been as bad as, you know, the terrorists, because a lot of people in the whole world don't believe that we should be in Iraq. They think we just went there and bullied people, and they were thinking we're probably going to be doing the same thing, going in all other countries and doing the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, what we want.
Thank you very much, Luke. Thank you very much, Lou. Good input. Gentlemen,
where do I even start? For, you know, here we are whining about what the world, you know, thinks about America. I guess there are certain countries in the world that are perfectly happy when America's bleeding and on her knees after September 11th. But when we get up to defend ourselves and we get up to strike back against terrorism, then, gee, we're just not so lovable. Well, I'll pass on being lovable in terms of being safe.
I think the issue that the callers raise with the decline of our freedoms and the fact that we're aggressive is what do Americans think about America? And I think that I hear a lot of Americans saying, I don't want my civil liberties crushed. I don't want us to be aggressive. I don't want to be the combatant.
You know, I heard another commentator say it, and I think it reflects what Jim just said as well. I wish President Bush and Republicans would stop acting like the worst thing to happen to this country in decades was the best thing to happen to their re-election hopes.
I'm afraid to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue if you want to know the truth after 10 o'clock at night.
Frankly, the country that's considered the biggest threat to world peace right now is the United States, because here we are.
Oh, that's offensive.
Excuse me.
Absolutely marching around, picking our enemies. If we really want to go around the world finding bad guys, why don't we find, look at North Korea, look at even South Korea.
Well, now,
Iraq, Iran, people who actually have weapons of mass destruction.
Because your candidate John Kerry came out and said, even had he known all the things he knows now, he still would have taken us to war in Iraq.
But John Kerry would have built an international coalition.
Well,
he would have had an entry plan, an exit plan.
Explain this logic to me, that John Kerry is running on this platform that the way we did it is wrong, but I'm going to get my allies to come and help us because we screwed up? Basically, the American people have other options other than Bush and Kerry. They both agree on the Iraq War. They both agree on the Patriot Act.
This is the first Sunday political debate. Let's go back to the people and talk to Carl and Bowie. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Dave.
Fine. Go right ahead.
I would like to commend the caller, Lou, who just called speaking about the civil liberties. That's a great concern of mine. I think that every time this country has some crisis, well, not every time, but I think it's a poor excuse that when we have crises such as in World War II, we interned the Japanese-American. Now, all of a sudden, we have a terrorist bombing of the World Trade Center. All of a sudden, we circumvent the Constitution. I think for us to lose what we're supposed to be, for America to lose what we are supposed to be about, when we have a particular crisis, I think is a very, very dangerous thing for people to incarcerate people for periods of time without a fair trial, a speedy trial, without representation. It's just extremely wrong. And I think that we, the American public, have to be very diligent to not allow the loss of life, sad as it may be, but we lose lives every day.
Okay.
But to change us who we are as a people.
Okay, Carl, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate that. Let's go across the Patuxent River from Bowie to Calvert County and on the line. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Go right ahead, my friend. Quickly.
First off, well, I wanted to thank the lady for making her comment about the U.S. being the major source of evil in the world, because she made my point, which is that since I was in college getting out of the Army in 69, I have fought against people like her that see the United States as a great evil in the world. When she said, you know, that she thought it was significant that 100 or 200,000 people turned out to protest in New York, well, it's always been that way. The left wing, they are professional when it comes to complaining. And you know, it's just like when I was in college in the 70s and Kerry was calling all us veterans, you know, the worst thing since Genghis Khan. You can always get a demonstration of the left wing that looks like the bar scene in Star Wars.
Okay.
With it. And so nothing's changed, and we'll just continue the battle. The United States is not the great evil in the world.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Appreciate your input. Richard in Gaithersburg, good morning.
Good morning. Just a quick list. The Republicans brought out their stars. That's why they were up first. And as long as the Democrats continue with their lies like greatest deficit ever, Bin Laden doesn't matter. And I'm waiting for Truman to give us the exit strategy from Japan. But the terrorist history, my building was blown up in 1972. I had a three-month-old son. I was 100 yards away at the time. And they've been killing Americans. This was in Germany. And this was, they've been killing Americans regularly up until the 90s when we got hit by terrorists every 2 years. And then in 91, of course, they brought it onto our shore. As far as Kerry, and this is not Bin Laden. This is much larger. The first time we sent troops against Islamic extremists was over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry, the war was over in 1968 as far as Vietnam, had it not been for Fonda and Kerry and folks. All the South Vietnamese now live all over the world because in the general in charge of North Vietnam said that they were going to surrender until they saw what was going on in the United States. I'd like to make some comments for the Libertarians.
Richard, very quickly.
Education was increased over 60% was not good. The Democrats killed, Bush brought out this coverage for health care coverage for everyone,
mm-hmm.
and the Democrats killed that, and he proposed that again this time. And the only reason we're in Iraq is to keep war off our shore. It's not the job of the federal government to keep war off our shore. It's the job of every citizen to protect ourselves, and we spend all this money going overseas to keep us from getting here. The only thing that get hit here, the only thing that can protect us is our neighbor, and we need to
Okay, Richard. Got your point. Thank you very much. Robert in Leesburg, Virginia. Good morning, Rob.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm Jerry. You're Robert. Come on, Robert. Get it right.
Yeah, right. Well, I just... Unfortunately, Jerry,
that's the problem with the Republicans and Democrats now. Nobody can get it right. All right, buddy.
Unfortunately, I need to start my...
Very quickly, Robert.
I got to critique your show, Jerry. I used to call in all the time, as you know.
Yeah, no.
I haven't called in as much, and the reason is you badger and harass anybody who might come up with a Republican point of
come
view.
Come on, now, Robert. That's not
Jerry.
Nice.
It's unavoidable. Secondly...
That's not nice, Robert.
Secondly,
is that true, Jim?
Some of the Democrats. Terrorism equals smoke and mirrors, one of the young ladies said. That just reinforces to me that the Democrats, they don't get it. They don't know what this is all about. The largest deficit in real terms, maybe in dollar amounts, but certainly not in percentage terms of GDP. Bush has alienated all allies. That's a distortion. Kosovo was an internationalist war as well. Were they against that when Clinton was doing that? We got struck the first time, like the gentleman just said, back in... They tried to knock those buildings down in 1991. Clinton never rallied the country. They just don't get it on this whole thing.
Robert, thank you very much. And I'm not badgering you or anything. The time is telling me that your time is up. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's talk to Mike on his cell phone. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, how are you? Good show.
Go right ahead.
I'm calling about several issues.
Very quickly, Mike, because of my time.
Okay. One, you talk about civil liberties. I feel like if everybody's doing their day-to-day thing, it shouldn't affect you. If you're not involved in any criminal activity, it shouldn't affect you at all. They put these things in place to protect everybody as a whole against terrorists.
Okay.
The other item is, this lady keeps talking about, Bush never talked about the economy. Well, I feel like the Democrats better be glad about that. All the economic indicators, these last, steadily has been positive. So, she ought to be glad that he didn't talk about the economy.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate your call. Jim, now you know. Don't take sides.
No, Jerry's very fair on the show. No, I think sometimes the listeners might get the wrong impression because we have four different parties represented, and sometimes it's an even split 2-2. Sometimes it's 3-1, and on this issue it's 3-1. So it seems a little more tilted than it is.
Although it's two to two on the war.
Yeah. Although you're seated in the next room and you're not allowed to sit in this room with us. hey, guys, I wish we could continue on, but the time has grown to the point where we've got to almost say goodbye. But before we go, politics in D.C. Anthony Williams goes to the National Convention, the Republican National Convention, very quickly to sell the idea that we need more home rule, that we need independent, we need representation, voting representation. Quickly, yes, nay, good or bad?
Absolutely, we should have voting representation in D.C.,
okay.
Certainly, I think D.C. should get statehood, frankly.
All right.
I think they should be able to get out of paying taxes.
Well, Patricia's been talking about ripping up the Constitution the entire hour. The Constitution is very specific as to the District of Columbia.
Oh, isn't that nice? Very nice.
We can change it. You have to go through a constitutional amendment.
Anyway, I want to thank our guests this morning. Eric Mickelson, the Green Party. Eric, thank you very much. Ralph Nader is not in your hair anymore. Patrice McKinney, Democrat. John Kerry better take his boxing gloves off, as one of our listeners suggested. And Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Michael Badnarik is going to rock this election.
He's a rocker. And also Jim Pomeroy, Republican.
A happy man right now.
Thank you very much, guys, for being with us. I want to thank those who helped to put it together. Next week, don't forget to join us. One of our political forums next week, they have large candidates of the District of Columbia will be here to discuss why they should be on the D.C. Council. So we'll have our doctor's call and money management. Thank you to you, Steve Solomon, our technical producer, Carolina Restrepo, our researcher. Also, Shaheen, public affairs assistant. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is the WBIG Big 100.3 and a WTEM Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation. From Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C., gorgeous day outside. Enjoy. Much peace, much love.
WBIGFM.